Welcome to episode 177 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. So really, welcome back. It's been a few weeks since the last episode. Sorry for the small hiatus there. I was out, of course, on the Hokkaido workshop over the last 2 weeks, and I've got to say it was amazing. There was a few things that didn't go quite according to plan, which I guess can be expected when you're depending on Mother Nature to set the stage, but many things went incredibly well, and I can't wait to talk to you about these, you know, about the various things that happened here on this podcast and share some pictures with you as well. Before I went away, though, I had partly prepared a podcast, and as I don't have all of my photos uploaded to my online gallery yet, I figured that today I would do complete that partially planned episode and talk about five apps for the iPhone that no photographer should be without. Some of them perhaps you could, but there are three must-haves in my humble opinion. If you don't have an iPhone and have never intended to buy one, I urge you to listen anyway, just because I want you to listen. But I guess really, if you've got no interest in this at all, you can tune out. But you know, there are similar applications that do similar things for smartphones. I've mentioned these before, so it could be a good recap for you as well. You might find yourself wanting to run out and buy an iPhone after this as well. I love mine. I think it's the best thing that I've bought in a long time when it comes to sort of little gadgetry, and that is the hours of fun. And you know, I'll start to give you an update on the workshop itself in the very near future. We'll talk about the apps today, and basically I just need a little bit more time to upload the images to my gallery. And if you want a sneak peek at the images that I've brought back, there are currently 95, and that's the least I can get it down to, from the 9 days that I've uploaded to my Flickr photo stream. So, you know, I mentioned recently about my workflow and how, I think that was on the Focus Ring actually, not on this podcast, but I mentioned now I was pretty happy with my workflow, one of the chosen few. And part of the reason for that is because my export now basically just throws all of my images into a directory, but then uploads them to my Flickr photo stream. So, you know, that's really, really easy for me now, and it's just part of the export. So, then I've got the extra job of actually uploading them manually to my own website. So it's actually easier for me to get them up to Flickr now. I will provide a link to all of the images on my own gallery just as soon as they're there. But for now, if you want to have a look, take a look at the photo stream on Flickr, and you can find a link to that on the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com. The first thing that I wanted to say today is, well, actually, I've already just said it, is that I love my iPhone. I owned a Windows mobile-based Windows mobile PC or something, like, you know, basically the OS for the smartphones. It was a few years old. It's not the most recent version of that operating system, but basically I had a smartphone for about 2 years before I got my iPhone. And I found it to be a constant pain in the behind. You know, there were things that didn't work well, perhaps partly my own fault because of the applications that I'd loaded to it, more than the underlying OS, I'd like to think. But even things like just having a reliable network connection was often a challenge. I'd set up a wireless LAN connection or a Bluetooth partnership, and it would work for a connection or two, and then it would just simply drop out. And there'd be no way of telling why. I'd not changed any settings, and then it would just start working again later. And, you know, that was also often surrounded by an equal amount of mystery. And so, you know, it was just so frustrating. And I actually, a lot of the phone carriers here, the phone companies here in Japan, they'll tie you into like a 2-year contract to get you to sort of pay back for the phone that they give you a little bit cheaper. I'm sure it's like that in many countries. But basically, I was tied into a 26-month contract for my previous smartphone. And I couldn't wait, so I ended up going out and getting the iPhone 2 months before the 26 month contract was up, and so I actually was paying like double for 2 months. I wanted it that badly. Anyway, there were a few applications that I loaded on my smartphone that I really found very useful for the photographer, that is. And they were basically to help me calculate depth of field and the time and location of the sun and moon rise and sets. And before I could move to an iPhone, I really wanted those capabilities as well. And I had to find some good replacements for these apps. And I'd noticed an app called VeloClock that I'd noticed a few years ago, actually, on the Mac. There's a widget or whatever you call it for the Mac. And that I'd tried out, and basically, you know, I found that that was now available for the iPhone, and I had an iPod Touch at the time as well, so I could give it a try. So, but basically, I mailed them before buying it, asking if they intended to put the ability to tell not just the time of the sun and the moon rise and sets, but also the location or the azimuth of the of that, you know, where it's actually going to the sun and the moon are actually going to rise. And they told me that this would be available in a future update, and they did indeed add that functionality a few months ago. And there was also an application that is called DOF, Depth of Field Calc, which would help, as you might imagine, with calculating the depth of field, and also, possibly more importantly, the hyperfocal distance. At first, this was made available as a web page formatted for the iPhone, but it required a network connection or a phone link to actually update itself. And most of my photography, when I really need this, to find this stuff out, is usually when I'm somewhere doing landscape work or something where I'm basically either nowhere near not only a network, but often not even anywhere near a phone signal. So it wasn't viable for me to use something that was on the web that I needed phone connectivity for. Pretty soon, though, they released a standalone version, so I was set. That was really the two things that I needed, and I was able to try them out on my iPod Touch before I got the iPhone. So really, pretty much, I was set and ready, and I just sort of I jumped ship a couple of months earlier than I. Should have done if I was a little bit more frugal and careful with my money. Many of you will know that I'm not, so I did that. Anyway, I have these couple of applications that I want to talk about a little bit more. But let's go through the whole five now and take a look at each of them in a little bit more detail. So three of my selected applications are of direct use for the photographer. The last two, not so much, but they're great to have. And there is an application that that is linked to photography, so I've picked five out. The first two I've already mentioned, but one more for the photographer is called ND Calc, and this is ND for neutral density, and Calc obviously for calculator. This is actually created by a fellow podcaster, Boris Nienke, and if you never use a neutral density filter, this may not be necessary for you. And it may not actually if you do, but it's definitely one of those nice to haves. It can really help with exposure time calculation, especially for the really dark ND filters that cut out many stops of light, because your camera's meter doesn't always figure this out, especially when you get to the really dense filters. So it's nice to have a little bit of help with that calculation. And ND Calc is a very simple interface application. Basically, it's got two dials at the bottom half of the screen and then the shutter speed or the exposure time indicator at the top. And, you know, one of these, the dials, the one on the left, is to select your shutter speed. And that's the shutter speed that you would use without any neutral density filter at all attached to your lens. So imagine that you have your camera set up so that you've selected an aperture of, say, f11 or f16. You know, you're closing down a little bit because you want to get a longer shutter speed, a longer exposure. And then you know you intend to stick a nice dark ND filter on the on your lens to get a really long exposure time. What you'll do is you'll meter the shot without the filter, find out what it is before you start to mess around with the ND, and then you'll you'll use that shutter speed and apply enter that using the left dial and ND calc. And say you're at like 125th, or no, hang on, let's just go a little bit slower. Say you're at f11 and it's giving you a shutter speed of 125th of a second. What you'll do is you'll dial that in with the bottom left. It's got those rotating wheels that you select your value with. And you'll dial in 125th of a second. Then you need to select the density of your filter, and that's using the right set of wheels. And basically, if you're using an ND8, which has a density of 0.9, then you would select this from the main dial on the right. And you would then see that your new shutter speed should be a third of a second. And, you know, to be honest, if you're using ND8s, three stops is not difficult to calculate. And the 9 times out of 10, you do it in your head, because you just don't need to use an application. It'll take you longer to get the iPhone out, to get the screen up and that. And just for those, if you're wondering what I'm talking about, obviously, to calculate 3 stops very quickly from 1/20th of a second, the easiest way to do this in your head is to just halve it 3 times. So, first from 1/25th to 1/12th, most cameras will do a 1/10th there, but just for the sake of getting to where we need to be, then again to 1/6th, and then again to 1/3, and you're done. So, just keep halving them 3 times, and that gives you 3 stops longer exposure. Now, ND calc really helps when you start to get the big guns out in terms of neutral density filters. If, for example, you're using an ND100, which cuts out almost 7 stops of light, then you would select ND2.0 on the right dial. And then in parenthesis, it has 100 times. So, that's basically, your ND100 is because it's 100 times. And the density is 2.8. And like I say, that gives you a density that will take away 7 stops, or 6 2/3 of stops of light, it actually is. But basically, if you don't want to halve it for 6 times, or do another way of calculating it, then you start to get the benefits of having something to do this for you. And you'll see that once you've dialed in the ND2.0 or the 100 times, you'll see that you now get a new shutter speed of 4 seconds. An ND1000 with a density of 3.0, for example, would make the shutter speed 40 seconds. And, so it's 10 times longer. And all of these examples are there on the dial. And you can actually, you can just sort of, select any of them that you want. I bought mainly for the 14mm. I bought a bunch of gelatin filters that I've cut to fit into the back of the lens. The front of that thing, it's like a half of a ball, really big sphere, so that you can't put filters on it. And I actually bought a number of, in fact, I've got them in front of me. What I'll do is I'll just read this out and just rattle around as I get them off my, knock my watch over. So what I bought was a 0.6, a 0.9, a 1.5, and a 2.0. I bought Fujifilter Optical Triacetyl Cellulose Sheets, and then basically just cut out some 35 by 32 millimeter slightly elongated squares, rectangles, I guess you should say. And then I basically can drop them into the back of the 14 millimeter. And the thing is that, originally the ND calc didn't have the 1.5 density, which is basically an ND32. It's a 32 times ND filter. And that was, for me at first, I was thinking, okay, I've just bought this, and maybe, it would be nice to have a way to add these yourself. But I mailed Boris, and he added the 1.5 pretty quickly for me. And so, thanks to Boris for that. And also, I know that he's trying to figure out a way to make it easy to add custom filters as well. Because, you know, if you use gelatin filters especially, there are a lot of different variations. And, you know, people generally, you'll sort of put two on together and do various things to get more density. So it'll be nice to add that, and I'm sure that that will be available at some point soon. For now, I've got all of mine covered. The 1.5 is now in there. So, again, thanks to Boris for that. Basically, though, the last thing, and this is the really good thing, well, one last piece of icing on the cake for the ND Calc, is that once you go over, I think it's 4 seconds, you get a countdown button that appears at the top of the screen. And that's basically, you know, you have the exposure there, like I say, 4 seconds or 40 seconds for the ND1000. And basically what it does is when you get this little countdown button appear, if you touch it with your finger, then it starts to count down. You know, there's a little status bar that goes down to show you how long you are along the count. And you basically, you know, it will count down 40 seconds for you. And then it will give a little buzz if you've got the vibration thing, I think, turned on. Or I'm not sure if you need that, but say if you put it in your pocket, as long as you can feel it, it will actually just vibrate quickly for you when you hit the 40 seconds. And that way, if you're using a cable release that doesn't have a built-in timer, you can basically use the iPhone to actually time your exposures. Of course, in a few years' time, there'll be Bluetooth or something else in the cameras, and we'll probably be able to just use these as a timer. We'll partner the cameras and the iPhone, and when it gets to the end of the 40 seconds, the timer will just, you know, release the shutter or put the shutter back, and, you know, basically end the exposure. All of that stuff probably to come. For now, I'm dreaming, but it is nice to have this little button appear after 4 seconds and give you a timer to time your long exposures. As I say, very simple to use, but very useful if you do use ND filters in your photography. So I suggest you take a look at this in iTunes. Just search for ND Calc with no space between the words, the letters. The next thing that I wanted to look at is the DOF calc, or DOF, depth of field calc. And this is from another German company, I believe, called Ney Media. And this, it's another great application for calculating your photography settings. As you probably know, I like to use very wide apertures in much of my work to get that nice dreamy bokeh look. And, you know, basically, the problem with this is that you can actually sometimes go a little too wide. And so it's nice to sometimes get an idea of just how wide you can go without being so wide that it becomes impractical. You do, of course, become accustomed to just how wide you can shoot with your lenses wide open. And I don't use this very often, to be honest, this part of this, the DOF calc. I use it more to talk to people and explain about depth of field than I actually use it to actually calculate it myself. But there's another important feature of the DOF calc that I use a fair bit in, you know, practical use, and that is to calculate the hyperfocal distance to shoot for any given focal length and aperture combination. If you are not familiar with shooting at hyperfocal distance, you might want to listen to episode 65 of this podcast. In there, I covered the whole theory of hyperfocal distance and some calculations and things in detail. Basically, though, just to quickly recap, sometimes, especially for landscape work, if you want to achieve what we call pan focus, where pretty much everything in your image is in focus, but you say, for example, you just focus on some trees in the distance, the first thing that you have in the image to focus on, then you'll be forfeiting some foreground detail. Basically because, you know, you're focusing too far into the screen, further than you need to get as much as possible in focus. So rather than just focusing on something in the distance, you can find the hyperfocal distance for your focal length and aperture, and then pre-focus to that distance and shoot away. Here's an example. Imagine that you're shooting a scene that you want in pan focus, and you're using a 35mm focal length. You could use the DOF calc to find out that that at 35 millimeters with an aperture of f8, the hyperfocal distance is 5.35 meters. If you focus your lens at just over 5 meters, everything then from 2.7 meters to infinity will be in focus. And for a landscape work, 2.7 meters is probably as much as you'll need. But if the closest subject that you want in focus is even closer than that, say you want a rock in the foreground, or like we were in Hokkaido recently, there was some snow in the foreground that I also wanted in focus, then you know, you might want to get a little bit closer. And so, you know, you can check to see how much you need to stop down the lens to achieve pan focus, including your intended subject. So, for example, again, with 35 millimeters, if you stop down to f16, the hyperfocal distance becomes just 2.7 meters, and your closest focus is now 1.34 meters. So, you know, if you're on a tripod and you want something just in front of you in focus, that's going to do it. The relationship is directly related to the focal length, of course, and with wide-angle lenses giving you a shorter hyperfocal distance, even at relatively wide apertures, it's not that necessary sometimes, you know, and they do have a lot of the, especially prime lenses, have a depth of field scale on the barrel of the lens, so you can use that as well. But it's just nice to be able to sort of look at this and figure it out, especially with longer telephoto lenses, especially zooms, because it's not easy to get that information on a barrel for a sliding scale. So, you know, you are going to rely on it more. I find that I rely on it more for longer telephoto lenses, such as the 70-200. And just to give you a few examples of how far out the hyperfocal distance does go, with these longer lenses, that imagine, say, that you go out to 200 millimeters with the 70-200, even at f16, the hyperfocal distance is 87 meters. So that means that you're going to be focusing out way off into the distance to get hyperfocal distance. And I find generally that you don't really need to go to hyperfocal distance once you're using that longer lens. But just to continue the example, at 300 millimeters, for example, at f16, the hyperfocal distance is almost 200 meters out. So, you know, these things you can sort of use the application for to figure out. And, you know, you can calculate these things, you know, in the field with the DOF calc or DOF calc. And I just think that it makes it a lot easier to make sure that you're getting things right. And you know, I do use this a fair amount when doing landscape work, especially, as I say, landscape work with longer telephoto lenses. You don't have to worry too much. I think, like I say, with wide angle, as they do tend to have a much larger or a much shorter hyperfocal distance. But you know, it's just one of those things that's good to have a play around with. And it does also, you know, I mean, if I'm on the computer at home, I will often use an application called Barnek. Or there's also a web version of the DOF calc, I believe. So if you want to play around with these and just get a handle on how all of these, the focal length and the aperture relationship affects the hyperfocal distance, you can play with that at home. But the beauty of the iPhone app is that you can take it in the field and you have it right there when you need it, when it really matters. So anyway, I'll put a link to the page for that and for the ND calc in the show notes so that you can have a look. But again, you can search for DOF calc in the iTunes App Store. And this time there is a space between the words. So it's DOF and then a space and then calc. So let's move on now to the real biggie for me when it comes to iPhone apps for the photographer. This, as I've said before, is a must-have for any outdoor photographer. VelaClock from the Vela Design Group tells you exactly where the sun and moon is going to rise and set at any given location on the planet at any day, past, present, or future. It also tells you the phases of the moon, and when each of the three twilights, the civil, nautical, and astronomical twilight, will begin at both dawn and dusk. And then, you know, from a recent update, you can now simply use the GPS on the iPhone to find out exactly where you are on the planet. And you can use that, you know, you can basically just use all of this data that I just mentioned for any given location. You can always see, you know, this using the GPS, you can always see this as your current location, and you can use the current location to record your home location as well. And you can also just add the latitude and longitude coordinates to specify the exact location and record that as a new location. So basically, you know, it's you can figure out the data for all of the sun, the moon, rise, sets, and the phases, everything, basically anywhere on the planet. There is, of course, a large list of place names, and in my experience, you can usually find somewhere close enough to the to where you're going to be if you're traveling. It's accurate enough for my use, but then when you actually get to the location, you can just use the current location again and get the exact data. If you have a compass with you, you can use the azimuth to find out exactly where on the horizon the sun or moon will be rising and get yourself in a position for the perfect sun or moon rise. If you are planning a trip, you can also now specify any date, past, present or future. Past, obviously, if you're planning a trip, it's not going to be that interesting, but for that same day or any day in the future, you can just dial those in there on the interface, and I find that very useful as well. There are, again, online resources for doing this and other applications that you can use on the PC, and I'm sure for the Mac as well. And someone actually did mail me, I didn't look it up in preparation for this, with an application that does look very promising, which I might give a try at some point. And if I do that, I'll definitely let you know a little bit more about that. But for now, VeloClock, and even if I do get something for the PC, VeloClock will remain my favorite application for this stuff, at least when I'm out and about in the field, and I really need the portability of the iPhone. I find more often than not, I really just want this information right there with me. And part of that as well is because I'm usually too busy to sit here figuring it all out at the PC. I do it when I have time, but generally I'll know roughly what time it's going to be, and then I'll use the VeloClock application on my iPhone to figure out the times that I need to get up in the morning and things like this, where I need to be, basically on the move. I'll do that while I'm on location, maybe in the hotel the night before while I'm preparing to get up the following morning. Anyway, I'll put a link to VeloClock, the VeloClock application webpage in the show notes, and you'll notice that at least as of March 2009, there's a testimonial by me on that page. And note that I'm not affiliated with VeloClock or the Velo Design Group in any way. I'm just with this, just supporting a product that I like and believe in. So I did just want to quickly talk about two more applications that you can get from the iTunes App Store that I find very useful for the photographer, though not directly related to photography. The first one is created by someone called Peter Jankuj, and that's called Audio Notes. And, you know, this is basically just a simple audio recorder. It's what I use on my iPhone to record audio like that we listened to a few episodes ago from the snowy beach at the Inuwashara Lake. You can just set it up so that it starts to record as soon as you start the application. And then when you're done, you just press a save button and the audio is just saved to the iPhone's memory. To get the file off the phone is a little bit complicated. You have to set up an FTP server, which is a bit of a pain if you're not very technical, but the companion website walks you through this, and it's not that difficult to do. Anyway, if you are out and about and you want to record a quick audio memo to yourself so that you don't forget to return to a certain place at a better time of day or time of year, or maybe you want to record the name of a location or subject that you just shot so that you can properly keyword your images, then this sort of application can be very useful. Again, it's called Audio Notes, two words, and can be found in the iTunes App Store. finally, there's one more app that I'm really enjoying having on my iPhone, and that is, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, Felawa PDF, Felawa, Felua. Basically, it's spelt F-E-L-A-U-R, and then the three word, the three characters PDF. And it's basically a PDF reader, but unlike anything else that I've tried, it can read really big PDF files very smoothly. Even ones with lots of graphical content are just, you know, they display very quickly, and they scroll, and you know, you can move around and zoom very easily. Why is this important for the photographer, you might ask? Basically, I think because you can stick your camera's manuals on your iPhone. I have the 1DS Mark III and the 5D Mark II user manuals on my iPhone in PDF form, and you can view them with no problems. You know, they're pretty big documents, but you can view them with no problems, zoom in. It's actually, even for a small screen, it's quite a good reading experience. You can even add bookmarks to certain pages, to any of the pages, I should say, that you know, if you reference a page regularly, like the custom functions, you can put bookmarks in there, and they get saved to the iPhone. To upload your PDFs to the iPhone, there are three methods. So you can either put them on a website and download them from a URL, or you can do a Google search right there in the application and grab them from the web. But because I always have these PDFs on my PC anyway, my favorite way to download them directly to the iPhone is to just, what you do is you I think the button's called Wi-Fi, something like that. But basically, you hit one of the buttons and it creates a connection via the Wi-Fi. You know, you need a Wi-Fi, or you know, a wireless LAN connection in set up for the phone. But as long as you've got that Wi-Fi connection, you just hit one of the buttons, the third option for downloading stuff, and then it creates basically a web interface. And you go to your PC or your Mac, and you use a web browser and type in the address that it says on the screen, and then that's it. You're connected. You've got basically an Explorer type interface in the browser, and then you can use that to find and upload PDFs from your PC or Mac to the phone. And you can actually then, on the phone, you can rename the PDFs, you can sort them into various directories, name ones. I have one for manuals, another for magazines. I loaded a bunch of professional photographer magazine PDFs to the phone too, in case I ever find myself with some time to kill but nothing to read. And I've found one issue with this application so far, which is, you should be aware of this, and hopefully it will be fixed soon. It's not fixed as of March 3rd, 2009. But I found that, a few weeks ago, shortly after getting back from Hokkaido, I found that all of the PDFs that I'd copied to my iPhone had disappeared. And also my manuals and magazines directories were gone. It was basically reset. This was probably done in an application update, which is pretty sad. You know, I mean, I would like these things to be carried over. And if it happens again, my appreciation for this application will go down. But you know, stick them back on there, and they're there. They work again. It's a bit of a pain though. So I really want this to be fixed. I haven't reported it yet. I should figure out how to do that. But you know, one slight problem there. Hopefully, it won't be persistent, and future updates of the application will not cause this to happen again. But for now, you know, it is very useful to be able to carry around the manuals for your cameras, as well as any other photography magazines or things that you might be interested in. So, this is why this is the fifth one of my top five. Incidentally, I haven't ordered these in any order. I would say that my favorite of all of the ones that I've spoken about today is definitely VelaClock. But I haven't really ordered the others in any particular order of, it's not a top five, counting down to the best. in fact, with the problems that I've found with the PDF reader, I probably would be in the reverse, if anything. But anyway, don't want to start panning something that I'm calling one of my top five. So, like I say, you can find the Felua PDF reader in iTunes. It's Felaur PDF, and that's there in the iTunes App Store if you want to take a look. So that's it. That's my top five apps for the photographer. I hope I haven't bored those of you that don't have an iPhone too much. If you have an iPhone or you're thinking of getting one, I hope this was useful. Once again, I'll put some links to these, some of the apps in the show notes, the first three. At least I found web links for. But they can all be pretty easily found by searching for them in iTunes in the App Store. None of them are very expensive. I didn't mention the price here because they do change from time to time and I didn't want to mislead anyone. So I left that out. But they're all just a few dollars at max. Also, before we finish, just a quick note about our photo assignment. Firstly, I've locked the February assignment so that you can no longer upload images, and I've turned the voting system on, and that will remain on until the 14th or 15th of March. So please do check out the Minimalism album at mbpgalleries.com and cast your votes for your favorite, your top three favorite images using the vote buttons above the image in the album. There are some great shots in the gallery as usual, so thanks to everyone that got involved. Also, I posted the theme for the next assignment, the March assignment, in the photography forum at martinbaileyphotography.com yesterday. The assignment theme for March 2009 is complexity. I thought this would make a change after minimalism, and also we did simplicity in the past. So let's try to depict complexity for our March assignment. It's totally up to you how you interpret and capture your image for the assignment. Just surprise us, that I'm sure you will. Remember that we are now on a monthly schedule, and so you'll be able to upload your image until the last day of March, pretty much anywhere in the world, and then we'll start the voting process again for a further 2 weeks, as we've just done for the last assignment. Note too that as we move into months where the end of the month is not close to a weekend, I will probably be announcing the theme for assignments in the forum more than not. So if you're eager to know what the theme is at the start of the month, check out the forums. And the chances are that it will already be announced before the first podcast of the month is released. That's it for this week though. So all that remains to be said is you have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye. The Martin Bailey Photography Podcast is a proud member of the Photocast Network. Find this and other great photography podcasts at photocastnetwork.com.